The Divorced Girl Smiling Podcast with your host, Jackie Pilosoff.
No one should have to go through a divorce feeling alone and isolated. The Divorced Girl Smiling Podcast is a production of Divorced Girl Smiling, where every show is 30 minutes aimed to empower you, help you feel validated and understood, and connect you with some of the best divorce professionals in the industry. So grab a cup of coffee or a glass of wine and start smiling as you join us right now for the Divorced Girl Smiling Podcast. Heard everywhere podcasts can be found and always at divorcedgirlsmiling.com. Before we get started, I want to ask you a question. Are you wondering what to do with your wedding rings? If so, I want to highly recommend MJ Gable. And MJ Gable is a diamond and jewelry buyer, and the founders are Matt and Ann Gable. I know them personally as I actually sold my wedding rings to them in 2011. It was a wonderful experience. They are the nicest people. They're so compassionate. They're really, really knowledgeable. And I was very, very happy with the price I got. And what's so great about MJ Gable is you're talking to Matt and Ann. It's very personalized. It's not like a computer program where everything's done online. It's personalized service and it will make you feel so good. So if you want to learn more about Matt and Ann and MJ Gable, go to mjgable.com. I also want to take a minute and recommend a wonderful therapy group in Chicago. It's called Affiliates in Counseling, and I have known its founder, co-founder Jason Price, for probably 15 years. He himself is a wonderful therapist, and he has so many other great therapists there, all with different niches, and so many of them specialize in helping people and children and families through divorce. So if you want to learn more, you can go to affiliatesincounseling.net, and you can find both Affiliates in Counseling and MJ Gable in the Trusted Professional section of Divorced Girl Smiling. So I think there are two kinds of people listening to this podcast. One are dog lovers. I think once you get to be a dog lover, that's it. You're just crazy about dogs and that's it. And then there are people who might not understand because you don't have a dog. So you don't really understand the impact of if you're getting divorced and you might lose your dog when you split up. I fall into the category of the dog lovers, but I was not like this forever. I just got a dog 7 years ago. So 7 years ago, I would have been the second half of this, what I was talking about. And now I think to myself, if I was going through a divorce and I knew there was a chance I was either going to lose my dog or only get to see my dog part of the time, I would be devastated. So today I want to help you if you fall into that category. I want to talk about five things you need to know about pet custody and divorce. And to do this, I have the best guest. Her name is Karis Nafti, and Karis is a certified dog behavior consultant. She's also an accredited divorce mediator. She's the founder of her practice, Who Keeps the Dog? Hi, Karis.
Hello, Jackie.
Thank you so much for being here. I know that you fall into that first category where you understand what it's like to have a dog. You have been doing this for how long? How long have you been mediating divorces with dogs?
I have worked with dogs professionally since 1996. So about 30 years ago was when I started teaching puppy school and working with dogs having behavior problems. And my mediation practice with dogs started about 5 years ago. So that is that's the long and the short of it. I've seen many thousands of dogs and many thousands of owners over the years and have done the very best I could to help all of them leave a session with me with a better relationship, whether it's a better relationship with their dog or a better relationship with their ex, or a combination of the two.
So do you agree with me that there's probably people listening who are devastated at the thought of losing their dog in the divorce? Tell me about that.
I could not agree with you more. I think for many people going through a divorce or a breakup, even if there isn't an actual marriage there, if there is a dog in the picture, the very idea of possibly losing the dog or not having access to the dog as often as you want can be the most emotionally gut-wrenching thing that people go through. It can be more impactful than financial decisions or other sort of things to consider in a divorce. But for people who love their dogs as much as many people do, the thought of losing them is, there isn't quite a word for it. Absolutely devastating.
So I want to tell my listeners, Karis wrote an article called 5 Things You Need to Know About Pet Custody and Divorce. And I wanted to have her write this and do this podcast to help you if you feel stressed and have a lot of anxiety about possibly losing your dog in the divorce. And you're right, Karis. It, for some people, I'm sure it would be more stressful than finances, the house, anything. I mean, a dog, I mean, I can just speak from my own experience and how I would feel devastated.
Absolutely. Because you would just, for some people, it simply is the most important thing. It's a priceless thing. So the thought of finances and things don't really touch the impact the dogs do.
Right.
Now, what's interesting, though, that you bring that up, and this is helpful for listeners to be aware of as they move into sort of a custody, the reality of a custody situation with their dog, is that if that is how you feel about your dog, your ex is probably totally aware of this. It's not like that's something that you can hide from each other. And so there's a lot of reasons I wrote that article, the 5 points. The first thing I want to say to the listeners is that this is not information about the best way to win a custody argument in court. I'm not a lawyer. This is not about how to use the law to get custody of your dog. The tips in this article and what we're going to talk about today are about how to approach the conversation in such a way that the best thing happens for the dog. It's about de-escalating conflict, not raising the conflict. And it answers some very common misconceptions that people have about what they should do with their dog when they go through a divorce. So for those people who especially feel very vulnerable at the thought of losing their dog, and certainly they know their ex knows this, and the kind of power plays that come into it, this is really helpful to address all of those other factors. You know, it's like sometimes what happens in divorces, you know, people will, they will want to sort of do what's ethical and be fair and keep the conversation going. And then suddenly an emotion gets triggered and people just go, okay, well, nope, I'm just got a lawyer and I'm not having that conversation anymore. So these tips can avoid that. So let's just get into the first one.
Okay, so your entire career is kind of doing what you just talked about, de-escalating things, mediating to make everybody happy, first and foremost, the dog, but also the couple. And so you don't have these power plays and these, I'm going to take you to court and get the dog, because this is a much better way to do it and to get what you want. I've had podcast episodes talking to mediators about how to get what you want, mediate, because that's the best way. All right, so let's jump into this. Number one of the 5 things you need to know about pet and custody divorce, Karis wrote, start talking about your dog as soon as possible when your relationship has ended. Why is that important?
Talking about the dog sooner eliminates the possibility of the sort of unspoken power plays that happen when a relationship ends. The fear that can come in about possibly losing the dog or what's going to happen with the dog will be eliminated if you bring it up sooner than later. What I find with a lot of my clients is they are either too scared to bring it up, or the thought of it makes them too anxious. They don't even want to talk about it, or there's sort of an assumption that they both think they're getting the dog and nobody even wants to say it out loud in case that's not the case, in case the other one disagrees. But the reason that you want to bring it up is that it is much better to deal with it at the beginning of a divorce because it tends to be less emotional. If it has been left till the very, very end, there's a whole lot of other emotions swirling around because of everything else that you've been dealing with. And the very fact that you didn't naturally bring it up earlier says there's a lot of emotion there. There's a lot of fear. If we can be honest with each other, as those of you getting a divorce, be clear enough to say to your ex-partner, listen, I would like to talk about the dog so that we can make a clear-headed decision about this. And as everything I do in my work, honestly, my main priority is, will the dog be okay? Now, if people are fighting about the dog, if they're trying to take the other one to court or they simply can't have a rational conversation about it, then that conversation is not about the dog. It's about the people's emotions. It's about their history. It's about other fights. And the dog almost becomes a symbol of winning an enormous battle between the two of them. And in those fights, we've lost the dog itself. Where should the dog live for the dog's sake is really the conversation we want to be having.
You're listening to the Divorced Girl Smiling podcast. My name is Jackie Pilisoff, and I'm your host. Today, we are talking five things you need to know about pet custody and your divorce. My guest is Karis Nafti, a certified dog behavior consultant and an accredited divorce mediator. Karis is the founder of Who Keeps the Dog. We are going to take a short break, and when we come back, we have four other things that you need to know about pet custody and your divorce. We will be right back. Where am I going to live? Will I be able to send my kids to college? Will I be alone forever? Do I have to go back to work? Who am I now? These are the kind of questions that newly separated people ask themselves. I would know, and so would Lisa Lisser, a divorced mom and an attorney turned divorce coach. Lisa is wonderful. If you're thinking of working with a divorce coach, I would highly recommend Lisa. She founded her coaching company, LZL Coaching, a few years ago to help people going through a divorce or before a divorce or after a divorce focus on their core issues, develop an action plan, prioritize the kids, and rediscover their best selves. If you want to learn more about Lisa, you can find her at lzlcoaching.com. I also want to take a minute and recommend a wonderful divorce attorney in Chicago and on the North Shore. Her name is Anna Krolikowska, and I have known Anna for over 10 years, maybe more. Anna is also a collaboratively trained divorce attorney. She's also a mediator, certified mediator, and she's the immediate past president of the Illinois State Bar Association. I can't say enough about Anna. I trust her. She's dedicated. She's compassionate. Just a really good person. And if you want to learn more about Anna, you can find her at annaklaw.com. And you can find both Anna and Lisa in the Trusted Professional section of Divorced Girl Smiling. Welcome back to the Divorced Girl Smiling podcast. My name is Jackie Pilisoff, and I'm your host. Today, my guest is Karis Nafti. Karis is a certified dog behavior consultant. She's a divorce mediator, and she's the founder of her practice, Who Keeps the Dog? Karis and I are talking about the fact that we know when you think about your dog and your divorce, it can be so stressful, so scary, and just a devastating thought if you think you might lose your dog. So we have five things you need to know about pet custody and divorce on our plate. And we're moving on to number two. Number two is agree between both of you that you're going to make a long-term plan that is best for the dog. Now, Karis, that might sound simple, but I think that would be a hard thing to do.
It is a very hard thing to do. It's probably the hardest of all the five points that I bring up, because a lot of people think that they're doing the right thing for the dog, but really they're sort of channeling their own desires or their own wishes through what they imagine is actually right for the dog. So even if it's not totally realistic, you want to try to bring it up with your ex to keep the conversation focused around the dog. Now, I can't tell you how many divorced people I work with who have the same conversation about children and the custody of the kids, of course. So this is not a new concept, but because dogs are, of course, very different than children, even though we love them in the same way, it's very easy to confuse what we want between that and what's actually the right thing for the dog. So, for example, let me give you an example of what I mean by this. I sometimes work with clients who live on the other side of the country from each other, you know, kind of like one's in New York and one's in California, and they've moved after they've split up. And one person will be campaigning to say, well, we're going to fly the dog back and forth so that we can both spend time with the dog on a regular basis. Now, this might be a dog who has a lot of anxiety issues. You might have a dog who's scared to be in a crate, let's say, who isn't a comfortable flyer. But sometimes they can't see that the fact that what they want to do for the dog is not right for the dog. So if a dog is not a happy, comfortable flyer, why would you want to insist that that dog flies back and forth between the two of you? And I hear things like this every week in my practice. So this is not an isolated story. So those kind of conversations, those kind of ideas, you have to pause. And what I tell my clients sometimes is, don't do this in front of your ex. Go home, sit on the couch, think about it. Think about your dog. What would your dog say if your dog could actually talk? And try to keep the conversation as much as possible with that in mind.
And that's not easy to do, but you know, you really have to be selfless and think of the dog. You're right, Karis. I was also going to add that the dog's age is a big factor, because I believe, now I'm not a dog expert like you, Karis, but I am a dog owner. And I believe that when a dog gets over like 6 or 7 years old, they really get comfortable and they don't like change. Maybe that's just my dog, but he doesn't even like to stay with other people. He's okay, but he doesn't like it. He likes routine. He likes to be in the same house all the time. So the age factor probably comes into play as well.
The age factor is a huge factor, and the breed of the dog is a huge factor. And the general character of each individual dog is very, very different. So the only dogs that ethically we can put in a position of doing shared custody are not too old. They are very easygoing dogs. So there's a lot of dogs like yours who really just have their routines and that's what they like people, you know, like we all know those kind of people. And those people are lovely. So you'll get dogs who do not enjoy change. They don't enjoy novelty. They're not naturally overly curious and adventurous dogs. Those dogs struggle in the long term in a shared custody situation. And you're absolutely right about the age of the dog. So dogs age at different speeds depending on their size. So the bigger the dog is, the faster they get old. So a Great Dane is kind of very elderly by the time it's 6 or 7 years old. And a Jack Russell Terrier is just getting into its prime, you know, so it depends on how big the dog is. But certainly young dogs on a younger scale are also the ones that can handle a shared custody situation. And when dogs start to move into their elder years, it's really not fair on them, definitely.
Okay, now that was number four. So let's just get right into that. If you're thinking about shared pet custody, do so wisely. So as far as breed, age, locations, what else should people consider? Like, I want to bring something up. I know a family who got divorced and they would send the dog with the kids back and forth to each home. Tell me about that idea.
So the kids, there's a few factors. Let's talk about shared custody as a broad topic because there's a lot of different points to it. The first point I would love listeners to understand is that shared custody is not ideal for most dogs. There's sort of this assumption that like, oh no, but the dog has to stay in touch with both of its parents. And that isn't the case for a dog. Dogs can be very perfectly happy living with just one owner, even if they lose contact with someone they're very bonded with. Dogs are fine. It's the people who are not. So the most important thing to understand from the onset is that if you want to do shared custody, you as the person need to know that the shared custody is for you and it's not for your dog. Don't say, oh, we're doing this for the dog's sake. Say, I'm doing it for my own sake. That's the first reframe.
Be honest about it.
Be honest about that. And the language that I use and the thing I bring up with my clients a lot is I will say the following sentence. I will say, do you think your dog will tolerate shared custody? Because that's what it is. It's something the dog may or may not be able to handle. It's not ideal for dogs, except in very unusual circumstances. So when I say you must think of shared custody, you must think about it wisely. And that's just on the dog side. We'll talk about the people factor in a second. When it comes to children and dogs, the slightly different story. First of all, when there are kids in the picture, generally the parents are more focused on their children than the dog, as they should be, of course. So when a dog is going to move with the children, it can sometimes be easier on the dog precisely because the people are not sort of emotionally obsessing over the dog and saying goodbye in a tearful way and having big, overly emotional reunions. But the focus goes to the kids. The caveat, however, is not all dogs are very good when kids are emotional. Not all dogs can be sort of, call them therapy dogs, even in an unofficial way. They're simply not wired for it, and we cannot expect them to. So one of the saddest things that I'd have to deal with so often, sometimes just as in my role as a behaviorist and sometimes in my role as a pet custody expert, is a dog who starts biting the children because the dog cannot handle the stress of the emotional children and the difficulty the kids have in adjusting to moving between homes. So let's say this to parents. If you want your dog to move with the children, you first have to be aware it might not work. Everybody, the whole family's got to be aware of that for the dog's sake. And then you can kind of try it and see how it goes. But if the dog starts running away from the children when it's time to transition, if the kids are like, no, you know, can't help but hug the dog all the time, and the dog is visibly stressed by this, there's lots of signals dogs give off. You know, they'll sort of freeze and their eyes go big, and that's a whole other podcast. But if the dogs are not coping with it, it has to change, because often if you don't pay attention to those signals early, that's when those really sad situations can happen where a dog might nip at a child purely out of stress, because what else can a dog do? So it works for some families, but it is not a guarantee, and the whole family's got to be on board with that from the beginning.
Now, what I'm hearing you say is that what people might not realize is that your dog is feeling the divorce. You know, we often think like, he doesn't really know what's going on. He has no... I think that pets know so much more than we think. Just like little babies, people think their three-year-old doesn't really know they're not in a happy marriage. That three-year-old, that person could be one and they understand. And I think the same thing goes for pets. So, Karis, I think you brought up a great point. If your dog starts acting out, peeing, pooping in the house, whatever it is, that might be their way of coping with the divorce.
Yep. So what I would add to that, Jackie, is that dogs, it's not so much that they're stressed by the divorce, but they're aware of stress. The stress of a divorce isn't necessarily different for a dog than if you lost your job or someone you love passed away. But they are aware when their owners are not behaving normally and when everybody's emotional and when the house that they're in does not feel safe because of all of the emotions that are going on. You are 100% right. Things like dogs messing in the house, suddenly becoming a little bit aggressive or a little bit growly or a little bit shy or a little bit weird, or they start chewing on everything. That is the only way dogs can deal with stress. That's it. What else can they do? They can't write you an email. They have to do something with their body to say, and it's not to say it to you. It's just the expression of stress in an animal's body. So they will be 100% affected by what is happening, but that doesn't mean that it's like, this is the fine line, because we don't want to treat them like children. So they're aware of it. But if we humanize them too much in our sort of thought process, then it's very hard to see them as, you know, the four-legged small predators that they are.
Okay, I'm going to move on to another thing you need to know about pet custody and divorce. We went a little bit out of order here, but you wrote, most dogs do have one primary person they're bonded with, even when they live with a couple. Okay, that kind of hits a sore spot with me because my dog loves my boyfriend much more than me, I think. We mean different things to the dog, but there is a primary person. And for my dog, it's him. And that just breaks my heart, but I still love him.
And that's, of course, you love him. And it's wonderful, Jackie. It's wonderful that you can see that and that you can say it with a smile because it's true. So I've got three dogs. Two of the dogs love me to pieces. And the dog who ironically is my favorite dog is in love with my husband. And that's just the way that it is. And we laugh about it all the time. But dogs naturally gravitate to one person. And certain breeds, and I mean, and this is again a whole other discussion about which breeds do this, because there are certain breeds, especially dogs that are guard dogs, dogs that were bred to work on farms especially, are genetically programmed to zero in on one person as their person. Like that is my sun and my moon and my heart and soul. They're just wired like that. But okay, we can go off on a tangent for hours on that. But in terms of, you know, every dog, this is a tricky thing to use words like every dog, because of course there's exceptions. But what I can safely say is that almost all dogs have a person that they are simply more connected to. It's not because that person is a better person. It's not because, you know, that person paid for the dog. You know, the other person might have picked up all the poop when the dog was a puppy. Doesn't really work like that. But it simply happens in the relationship between dogs and people. This is just how our relationships evolve. Because certain dogs just prefer men over women, for example. And that's just seems to be the way that they are. Some dogs really enjoy a certain person's personality and character because it matches with them. For some dogs, it's a certain kind of exercise or activity that that person does. And we can't control this. If we just take a deep breath, and what I would like to say to listeners who are listening to this, if you close your eyes and you take a deep breath, you probably know of the two of you who is the dog more connected to. It might not be the answer you want it to be, but you probably know. And if you really love your dog, if you truly love your dog, that person is the one who should get custody of the dog, even if it's not you, for your dog's sake.
Okay, but Karis, I do want to say, like, if I was, God forbid, in a custody battle with my boyfriend about who was going to get the dog, my dog absolutely loves me. Like, I know he does. So is that true for every case? I mean, you know, my dog would live a very happy life if it was just me and him, I believe.
So that is a perfect segue, and we didn't plan this, listeners, but it's a perfect segue into the point I make about visitations. Okay, so beautiful point, Jackie, and it's totally correct. So even if your dog, I'll use my dog as an example, okay, the dog who's in love with my husband. If my husband and I were separating, or let's say my husband was moving to Mars, let's use that example, and my dog Sam was going to live with me, he would be a totally happy dog. Dogs go through sort of like sometimes a 2-week or a 2-month process of kind of adjusting to a person being out of their life, and then they are fine. They recover. They live a wonderful, happy life. However, what will mess with that is if your ex-partner comes to visit. So visitations with the dog. So let's say you know, person A and person B have gotten a divorce. Person A is getting custody of Rover. And Rover moves in with person A. There's a bit of an adjustment. And after a couple of weeks, Rover is very happily living with person A. Now, if person B shows up 2 months later, knocks at the door and says, listen, I miss Rover. I want to take Rover out for a walk. Okay. You can picture this happens all the time. What will happen for Rover is that Rover will be so excited to see person B. It'll be like, every single Christmas and birthday and 4th of July is all happening in one 30-second moment. It's like the most exciting, wonderful, happy moment, like doggy jumping jacks, all kinds of things. And then they'll go up for a walk, and then person be like, oh, I missed you. And it'll be this very super excited, super sweet, emotional thing, right? Wow. And Rover's so happy. And person B is crying and he's like, oh, I've missed you so much, my boy. And then person B leaves again. And then there's Rover, who, after having rebonded with person A and was just fine, now had a wonderful reunion with person B, and now person B disappears again. And that means Rover has to go through the whole process again of readjusting to life without person B. The big problem here is that if person B kind of randomly visits, like maybe once a month they knock on the door, or once every 2 months, or maybe let's say once in 2 weeks person B comes twice, that's when you can start seeing anxiety issues come up in dogs, because then Rover starts waiting at the door. Like, is today the day? Is today the day that person B is coming? He's listening for the cars. You know, the Rover's looking for little doggy clues of when this person might be coming. And that can create anxiety issues and stress and destructive behaviors in dogs.
Okay, so what you're saying is it's better for the dog to not see the person anymore? That is so sad.
It's so sad. I know it's really sad. If they are going to see the person, these are my suggestions. That it be somewhat regular, okay? So if it's like maybe once a week, then the dogs get used to it. It's when it's very, very sporadic and random that it can become harder for them. The other thing is, when those visits happen, the person who's visiting should put the dog on a leash and take the dog for a walk, unless obviously there's like medical issues, the dog can't go for a walk. But assuming the dog can walk, that rather than sitting in one room and having a hysterical, happy, I love you, I'm petting you, I'm licking your face, to immediately go on a walk and let the dog dissipate its excitement, that kind of keeps the energy of the visit a little bit calmer. But what I'm saying, especially about the bonding, and this is what's so hard about the work that I do, is it's like, yeah, from the dog's point of view, probably be easier if they never saw that person again. Ouch. But if you are going to do it, you want to keep it calm and you want to keep it kind of regular. However, I have so many howevers in this.
Okay.
The other challenge with visitations is from the people side. If you agree to let your ex come and visit the dog, like whenever you want, I'm using air quotes. Yeah, you can come visit. That's no problem. Thank you for letting me have the dog. You can visit anytime. Then what you, the person, are setting yourself up for is an ex-partner who has your permission to sort of pop into your life whenever they want. And that can get really toxic after a few months or a few years.
And guess what else? What happens when someone gets a girlfriend, the person who has the dog is like, no, you can't come see the dog. No, because they're upset about something else. They can't believe you already have a boyfriend. So now all of a sudden you can't come see the dog. Well, now the dog's expecting you because you've been going for once a week and walking when you get there, just like Kara said. And now you also, it messes with your psyche because you're so upset. You can't see the dog. You feel like you're being punished because you are. And so that's no good either.
The new relationship factor is huge from both sides, whether it's the person visiting the dog or the person who has custody of the dog. I've lost track, honestly, Jackie. I've lost count of the amount of people who get in touch with me after they've kind of been doing like a casual visits and it's worked out for a few months, sometimes a few years, and then someone's got a new live-in partner and the partner said, this is not cool. And suddenly the said person says, but now I can't visit my dog anymore. And it's like, yep. And, you know, I kind of understand that. Frankly, if I got into a relationship with someone and the ex was still coming around with the dog, I can understand the strangeness of that and where that conflict comes in. So if you are going to do visitations like that, here's some suggestions. That the person who has custody of the dog is allowed to say that it's over whenever they feel like they need to. You have to sort of build in permission for your own mental sanity that if you no longer want your ex in contact with you in 2 or 3 years or 2 months, you have the right to say that. You also need to give notice for the visits, whether it's sort of like 24 hours or 48 hours. But if that visit is not convenient, you also need to be able to say so. So I have a quick example of this. Was a woman I was working with who they got a divorce, and her husband said, "That's fine, you can keep the dog, but I'll pay for the dog. You can keep the dog, but I want to visit anytime I want to." And he would just sort of knock on her door whenever he felt like it, often with a new girlfriend or with a new car, to like take the dog for a walk. And she didn't have the ability to kind of get her life back or move on from the relationship because her ex just kept arriving whenever he felt like it, because that's what she agreed to sort of 5 years previously. So for your own sanity, you don't want to set yourself up that you never sort of really end that relationship because of the dog.
And I just thought of one other thing. Maybe the person who is saying they're coming to visit the dog wants to get back together and using it as an excuse. And then neither person can move on. And the dog is just this, here's the premise of why I'm coming to visit, when in reality, they want the person. So something to think about. Karis, we are out of time. We've gone way over, which is fine. But because we have so much to say, and I absolutely love this conversation because I deeply personally care so much about dogs, and I understand people who might be getting divorced, not knowing what's going to happen and the stress that brings with it. So thank you so much for taking time to do this today.
Thank you, Jackie. I had such fun. I hope this was super helpful to everybody who's listening.
I think it was. And I want to tell my listeners, if you're interested in having a consultation with Karis, you can find her at whokeepsthedog.com. And you can also find her in the Trusted Professional section of Divorced Girls Smiling. And then, Karis, you also work with divorce professionals. So just tell my listeners, in case there's any divorce professionals listening, how you can help them, divorce attorneys, divorce mediators, anyone.
Any divorcing people. So I work, yes. a lot of the work that I do is in collaboration with other divorce professionals. So if you're a divorce mediator, if you're a lawyer, especially when working in a collaborative way, you can bring me in as an outside expert to sort of spend an hour with your clients to advise them about things like, if we're doing shared custody, these are the schedules, just to work in tandem with you to help resolve the dog issue. I do this worldwide. I'm most happy to collaborate. And I also teach courses for divorce mediators, divorce attorneys, on how to handle pet custody cases in the best way possible. And all of that information is on my website.
And Karis is also a speaker. So if you wanted to hire her for an event, she could be a speaker on this subject as well. And to my listeners, I just want to thank you for listening. I hope this was helpful to you. If you want to find trusted, vetted divorce professionals like Karis included, or you want to listen to more podcasts, read articles, download my mobile app, or sign up for my free consult, come see me at divorcedgirlsmiling.com. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you real soon.